Oh, all right. You just got this.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, Mr. Is it Saunders or Sanders?
Yes, ma'am.
Is it Saunders? Okay, go ahead.
I've reserved 3 minutes. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Sanford Saunders, and I'm here today with the privilege of representing Mr. Gerald Walpin. We're here today to address whether Congress had the ability to create and maintain a watchdog over administrative agencies to ferret out waste, fraud, and abuse, which it did in 1978 when it passed the first Inspector General Act, creating the offices of Inspector General.
Can Congress stop the president from discharging Inspector General? Can they say no, you can't do it?
They can create conditions before, for example, for cause, or they can
create a notice requirement.
That.
Yeah, they haven't created a for cause condition, right?
No, they haven't,
Your Honor. They've created a notice condition, and if your client wins, what happens here? He goes back to work, and then what happens?
The president fires him,
right? I mean, the president could do that, right?
Yes, the president can.
Okay.
But he goes back to work, he gets to go back to the investigations that were underway and fulfill Congress's goal, which was to allow the inspectors general a specific period of time after notice of an intent to remove.
Now, what's the purpose of that notice period?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What was the purpose of that notice period?
The purpose of the notice period is twofold. It is to allow for communication between Congress and the administration.
And did that happen in this case?
Some, Your Honor, but it was
some.
Altered.
So communication happened. But you're now saying we're supposed to judge the adequacy of the communication? What's the
no,
basis
Your Honor. Okay. Let's go back to the second part also. There are two parts to what
but the... But let's focus on the first one. Communication is supposed to happen. Did that happen? The answer is yes. Right? There were letters going back and forth.
There were letters that went back and forth, Your Honor. The communication, though, had to be skewed by virtue of the fact that the White House engaged in an ultra vires act by removing the Inspector General before.
That's not skew the communication. Senator Grassley says, I don't like this. Was Senator Grassley, was his ability to communicate somehow limited by the claim that the first notice was inadequate?
His ability to communicate was complicated. And improperly complicated by the fact that the Inspector General was now out of his office.
I don't know what that means. So what's the second purpose?
The second purpose is to allow, in the words of Congressman Towns, when they passed the Inspector General Reform Act.
And in the words of anyone else besides the one floor statement from Congressman Towns, that's it, right?
Well, there were general statements about shielding the Inspector General from undue...
But you were making a different point, that to complete investigations.
Right.
And Representative Towns is the only one that says that and says it in a rather general way. But there's no other evidence besides that.
Well, he said it in a rather specific way, to get the things done that need to get done. And he was talking about the purpose of an amendment where previously there was a provision for notice, but it was after the fact notice to Congress. The Inspector General Reform Act 30 years later, with Congress having the benefit of 30 years of experience, of watching administrative agencies in the White House interact with the Office of Inspector General, amended the Inspector General Act to provide that the notice had to be 30 days in advance with a reason before the president could remove or transfer the Inspector General. And that's what was violated here. In fact, the White House made a mistake. They applied
statute. They made a mistake on the first day, but the fact is he was on administrative leave being paid, correct? He wasn't removed.
Right, he was on administrative leave, yes, but that is removal.
Well, that's the issue in the case, right? And for us to issue a mandamus here, you have to have your right to relief has to be clear and indisputable.
Your Honor, it is clear.
And, well,
it is indisputable.
I know you think it is, but, you know, the statute says removed. The Senate report says that means terminated. The president said here, I didn't remove him. I put him on administrative leave. That's different from removing him. He's still being paid.
Your Honor, 2 points. One.
So, given that you have to have a clear and indisputable right to relief to get a mandamus here, what I don't see how you get around that.
Your Honor, the government in it, the appellees in their brief note that administrative leave was applicable here based on the Civil Service Act and the Back Pay Act. The Civil Service Reform Act specifically states that it does not apply to government employees who are subject to presidential.
Maybe they didn't have the authority to put them on administrative leave?
Yes.
But they did, right? You're not challenging that.
No, I'm not challenging they did it. I'm challenging that was the wrong thing to do, but violates the act.
But didn't they do it? He was on administrative leave. He was not terminated, correct?
No, he was removed and transferred.
When was he terminated?
That's the question in the case.
When was he terminated?
On June 10th.
OPM regulations say that removal means separation from employment. That means termination.
Correct. And he was locked out of his office.
When was he terminated from employment? You just said it. It wasn't when the president wrote the letter and he was locked out of his office. He wasn't being terminated from his employment then. Right? He was still getting a paycheck. He was terminated from employment. Separated from employment, removed when he was terminated, and you just said that was not until July.
Your Honor, if we are talking about termination,
right, that's what we're talking about. That's what removal means, right? Termination,
yes,
from employment.
He was removed from his office the day before the president sent the letter. The fact that they sent him a paycheck was another clerical act, but the Congress could not have passed the Inspector General Reform Act, stating with its express purpose to increase the protections and to insulate the Inspector General from pressure from administrative agencies and from politics, and to ensure that the Inspector General had the ability.
But one interpretation could be that what Congress wanted was to make sure that the Inspector Generals weren't terminated until Congress had a chance to weigh in and try to convince the President not to do it, which is, you concede that in your brief, that's one of the arguments. And if he's on administrative leave, they can do that, right? Because at the end of it, the president could say to Congress, yeah, you know, you're right. This guy can stay. I'm not going to remove him.
But if he's on administrative leave, he can't fulfill the second part of the reform intended by the Inspector General Reform Act. He cannot continue to do the work and get done the things that need to be done.
Who was the Inspector General during this 30 days? Was there an acting?
There was an acting who was appointed.
That's the person who's doing it. That's the person who's responsible during those 30 days.
By virtue of them appointing and acting, they have terminated the prior Inspector General. You can't appoint an acting under other circumstances.
Suppose you had a case where you had an Inspector General who was clearly engaged in a really abusive behavior towards his employees. You know, really bad stuff. Abusive, sexual, completely inappropriate behavior. Are you saying the president couldn't put him on administrative leave to get him out of the office during that 30 days?
Not administrative leave, Your Honor. There could be issues where whether somebody was competent or capable to continue in their office,
just stick
incapacitated.
Stick with my case. Don't change the hypothetical on me.
No, Your Honor, there are provisions.
My case is, the facts are, the Inspector General is abusive, gross stuff, endangering the workplace.
He was violating the law?
No, not violating the law. Just maybe violating, not criminal laws, maybe violating Title VII and other acts that prohibit this kind of thing. But are you saying that the president could not put that person on administrative leave while he explains to Congress why he's removing him? That's your position, right?
Your Honor, there are circumstances where where an inspector general might be violating the law, where then he would be incapable of continuing in his office and would not be competent. And then could be put aside. But that's not the circumstances we have here. What we have here is exactly what Congress was intending to protect against, which was an inspector general who was engaging in investigations that were unpopular. An inspector general who had started an investigation and who had started and recommended an investigation of a friend of the White House. An inspector general who, when a plea bargain was reached, objected to the plea bargain because he felt there was more to it. And it was at that point, after 2 years of receiving commendations and plaudits for his work, that all of a sudden this inspector general received a phone call at 4 o'clock in the afternoon while driving in his car, and he's been told by the White House counsel that he was given a choice to resign or be removed. The specific word from the statute, be removed. When he asked for more time, he was told no.
In fact, he was on administrative leave during the 30-day period. That's what, in fact, happened.
Your Honor, he wasn't removed until
30 days later.
No, Your Honor.
He wasn't terminated until 30 days later. Do you agree with that?
No, Your Honor.
You don't?
I believe he was removed. Right. And I may be a question behind. He was removed on June 10th. Yeah. And the White House then tried to figure out a way how to make June 10th 30 days after June 11th, 30 days after June 10th, and they can't do it. They made the mistake, and rather than correcting it, they then engaged on a personal attack on Mr. Wolpin, questioning his professional abilities and his personal capacities, going so far as to use euphemisms for senility to keep him out of office. If we look at what removed means, he was not allowed back into his office. He was not allowed access to his computer. He was not allowed access to his staff.
Coming back to what removed means, and you're using a dictionary definition of removed, but removed is almost a term of art here, right? Under OPM regulations, under case law, dealing with employment terminations, removed means, if we think removed means termination from employment, all of your points about being locked out of the office are irrelevant. Wouldn't you agree? If we disagree with you and that we say removal means termination from employment, then these arguments about being locked out of his office mean nothing, right?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because, for example, if we're proceeding under the statute cited by the appellees in their brief, the Civil Service Reform Act and the Back Pay Act, the Civil Service Reform Act specifically states that it does not apply to Mr. Wolpin. So the idea that they can use administrative leave as a substitute to somehow turn back the clock violates that statute. The statute specifically states it does not apply to presidential appointees subject to Senate confirmation. And that's what Mr. Wolpin was. He was a presidential nominee with Senate confirmation.
Let me ask you, you argue about the duty to act. Who has the duty to act here? Is it the president or is it the people that you've sued?
In this case, consistent with this court's opinion in Swan, it is the people whom we have sued who have the ability to allow Mr. Wolpin back into his office.
Contrary to the direction of this, so the president says you're fired, but the folks that you've sued can tell him come on back anyway?
They can provide him the requisite relief and allow him back in, as with the administrative officials who were subject to the suit that the court pointed out would have been the appropriate target of suit in Swan, because it was filing against President Clinton in Swan that raised concerns with the court about separation of powers, whereas if it was the officials and the people with the operative capabilities within the agency who had been the targets of suit.
Well, if it's the appellee's duties, why do you spend so much of your time talking about the president's duty here in your briefing? Talk about the president's duty under the act.
Well, it was the president who acted to remove.
And why didn't you sue the president?
Because based on this court's decision, the decision in Swan, the president was not the appropriate defendant based on this circuit's precedent. Now, if I can turn, I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll stop.
All right.
Thank you.
Ms. Gilbert?
Good May it please the court, Helen Gilbert on behalf of the government. As Judge Tatel has identified, the purpose of the Inspector General Reform Act notice provision was intended to give Congress time to discuss a potential removal of an Inspector General with the President. That discussion occurred in this case.
Yeah, but didn't they fire him on June on the 10th?
No, Your Honor.
He told them he was removed. What looks like happened to me here is that they fired him on the 10th, and then they later discovered they couldn't do that without giving 30 days notice. All right?
Because that's what
Lewin says. Eisen says in his letter to Senator Lieberman, Mr. Wolpin, quote, was removed.
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. First, it was made clear to Mr. Wolpin on June 10th that he was placed on administrative leave.
How was that made clear to him?
Where does it say that?
Yeah.
Wolpin admits, taking all of Mr. Walpin's allegations as true, he admits that in that phone call he was placed on administrative leave during that time.
Mr. Eisen used? What's the record show?
I believe the record shows that he was told that he would no longer be performing the duties of Inspector General, but he would be paid during this time. He admits
in that phone call in the car. June 10th conversation.
Based on what Mr. Wolpin alleges, yes, Your Honor, he admits in his own declaration that he was paid through July 18th.
What did Mr. Eisen mean when he said, as Judge Tatel referred to, when he told Senator Lieberman that he's been removed? And I think told Senator Collins that as well. Yeah.
We don't believe that's relevant to this inquiry, Your Honor. The President complied with the only requirements that the Inspector General Reform Act put forward in his June 10th letters to the Speaker of the House, Pelosi.
Suppose they had fired him on the 10th. I mean, Eisen says, he says you have, quote, 1 hour to resign or be fired. Right? That's what he said.
That's what Mr. Wolpin alleges.
Well, didn't you just say we have to accept those as true?
We do, Your Honor.
Okay, fine. So let's assume that they did, and they fired him, but a couple days later they sent a letter giving reasons. That wouldn't comply with the statute, would it?
Under your hypothetical, Mr. Wolpin was removed, as that term is used in the statute, yes, but...
I'm just asking you how we think about it. I mean, I understand he was in fact on administrative leave, and he was paid, right?
Correct.
But isn't it pretty obvious that what happened here is that the White House didn't realize until the next day that it couldn't do what it had done on the 10th?
No, Your Honor. No? The White House intended to comply. The record shows that the White House complied with the statute.
You have 1 hour to resign or be fired. That doesn't sound like I'm going to put you on administrative leave.
But he was placed on administrative leave at that time.
Not on the 10th.
He was, Your Honor. Mr. Wolpin was still the Inspector General of the Corporation for National and Community Service until he was removed in July. The President was not restricted by the Inspector General Reform Act from placing Mr. Wolpin on administrative leave. In fact, Congress contemplated the President having total ultimate authority over all of the executive officials.
Yeah, this shouldn't be hard to do. This shouldn't be a hard thing to do. To terminate an inspector general who serves at the pleasure of the president. This appears to be pretty hard to do. People didn't know the right language to use, right?
Well, Your Honor, Congress, it shouldn't be hard to do.
Right, yeah.
Inspectors general are removable at will. Congress recognized that. It legislated against that background and specifically stated that the only requirement it was imposing was a notice provision that it did not intend to alter the president's ultimate authority over removal. In this case, the President complied with all of those requirements. The purpose of the statute was met, and in this case, there was a very substantive dialogue between Congress and the President, and at the end of those 30 days, Mr. Wolpin was removed from office.
But the people who were communicating with him weren't using that sort of language, were they? They were pretty loose then in their use of the word removal, which is a word that has some legal significance in this setting, doesn't it?
That was that the use of that word removal was in a later communication, which was part of the process, but the president had met the requirements of the Inspector General Reform Act with the June 11th letter.
You can see why Congress would be concerned here, right? Because the White House tells them, we've removed this person. And they say, well, wait a second, you can't remove him until we've had a discussion about this. Can you see why Congress would be a little concerned about such loose use of language?
Well, the actual language that the president used in his letters to the Speaker of the House and the President of the
Senate. I'm talking about the communication from Counsel Eisen.
But the communication that matters in this case is the notice given to Congress. And that's all that the Inspector General Reform Act requires. It doesn't say that notice is to be given to the Inspector General. It says that notice is to be given to Congress. And the President
clearly complied with that. All I'm saying is, can you see why Congress would be confused about the communications that came from the White House in this matter?
It's possible that Congress could have been confused, but
that's
the...
Because they used the word removal.
...purpose of the dialogue, which clearly occurred in this case. Congress is given plenty of time to discuss the impending removal with the president, to reflect on the removal. Congress has many tools available.
Yeah, but it wasn't called an impending removal. That's not the phrase Mr. Eisen used. He talked about the removal.
But the president did say to be removed in 30 days in his letters to Congress. Mr. Walpin has... Mm-hmm. Yes,
John. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Mr. Walpin has not met the standards for mandamus, and this court should...
What do you think about his argument about notice? That there wasn't really... They didn't give any reason here. It wasn't effectively a reason.
Well, the president did give a reason for removing Mr. Walpin to Congress, and this court should not delve into the adequacy of that reason based on its prior precedent regarding general reporting requirements.
Yeah. Suppose the letter hadn't given any reason. I know that's not this case, but just...
Of course, Your Honor. If the letter hadn't given any reason, it's possible that the president would not have complied with the statute.
Really?
But that doesn't mean that it's justiciable in this case.
I mean, I guess one answer to my question is, well, I mean, if I'm right, it doesn't really make any difference. You know, Congress can find out the reason by writing him a letter, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. Yeah. Congress has many tools by which to discuss impending removal with the president. And Congress never contemplated that the court would come in and police the adequacy of any explanation that the president gave to Congress. The statute is about relationships between Article 1 and Article 2, and not about the court's role.
So is anything in this statute enforceable? I mean, in this particular aspect of it, the removal thing?
No.
If on the 10th they had just fired him, what?
No, Your Honor, that would not be judicially enforceable.
What would we, really?
Our position is that it would not be judicially enforceable, no.
Why not?
Congress did not intend to create any judicially enforceable rights by individual inspectors general.
I mean, they could, Congress could impeach the president if they wanted to, if they really felt strongly about it, right? But
Congress could do a number of things, correct? Right. Could impeach the president. Yeah. It has power over...
Under our mandamus jurisdiction, if an officer has a duty to act and fails to comply with that duty, you're saying we have no authority to compel?
Well, our argument is that the individual in this case has no clear right to relief. There's no clear right to reinstatement as contemplated by the Inspector General Act.
Suppose it was. Suppose he was terminated on June 10th.
And no reason given.
Yeah, no reason given. Just fired.
We don't believe that would be judicially enforceable. Congress didn't intend to create any sort of remedy.
So what's mandamus? What does mandamus do?
Yeah, if I'm with you on no implied cause of action, if I agree with you on that.
Correct. But mandamus...
No mandamus jurisdiction there?
We believe not, Your Honor. Mandamus requires a clear right to relief.
Well, under my hypothetical, it's clear.
But it's not clear that the relief the Inspector General would request would be a reinstatement, and we don't believe that the Inspector General Reform Act grants an Inspector General the clear right to reinstatement. Reinstatement must be effectuated by the president alone. And in this case...
What about back pay? Could we order back pay?
That's possible. You could order back pay. That would be a very different challenge, though. In that case, the Inspector General will go to the Federal Court of Claims and may have a remedy for back pay, but that's certainly not reinstatement. Uh-huh. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, we rest on our brief.
Mr. Sanderson, how much? 1 minute, okay.
Your Honors, what we just heard from the appellee is the problem. It is saying that the president has the right to violate the law and then can explain it and work it out later. And that's not what the Inspector General Reform Act provided, if it is to have any meaning, and this court's precedent dictates that amendments to statutes are to be presumed to have meaning. They changed the statute from notice after the fact
to notice. She's not saying there's no meaning. She's just saying it's not judicially enforceable.
Well, but that would
not every right is enforceable in court. You agree with that?
But not every right is enforceable. But this one is, because one, he does, Mr. Wolpin does satisfy the criteria of Court v. Ash for a private right of action, and two, the mandamus provisions apply here. This is exactly what the court should be doing from Marbury through Swan, Wiener, Berry, Humphrey's executive, Morrison v. Olson.
My initial round of questions, if he gets back in, and then he can be fired again, right?
That's what Congress set up the system for, was to provide for that, provide a system that doesn't allow for, otherwise we have a repeat of October 20th, 1973, and the Saturday Night Massacre, where the administration then can utilize its power to stop any investigation it wants by an inspector general and then talk to Congress about it later, but they can shut it down. And the Inspector General Reform Act was intended to prevent that beforehand. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.